Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to New Books in Middle Eastern Studies. I'm Joshua Donovan, a host of the channel, and today we'll be talking to Ethan Menchinger about his new book, The First of the Modern Ottomans, The Intellectual History of Ahmed Vasif, which has just come out through Cambridge University Press. Welcome, Dr. Menchinger.
Hi, Josh. Thanks for having me.
No problem. All right. So first, we like to introduce the guests and have them tell us a little bit about their training and about how they came to write the book. You have in the beginning of your book, this wonderful piece where you talk about meeting Ahmed Vasif for the first time. I was wondering if you might share that with your viewers and how you came to write a book about him.
Of course. So first, maybe I should just say a little bit about who Ahmed Vasif was to start off. So Vasif was a major intellectual statesman and historian in the 18th century Ottoman Empire. The way that I came to meet Vasif was as an undergraduate at the University of Toronto in about the year 2006 or 2007. I happened to pick up his chronicle and started reading it and was first drawn in by the fact I was first drawn in by this interplay that I could see in the text between what you could say was history and historiography. So Vasif wrote himself into his own history in certain extended passages, literally made himself one of the actors in parts of his history. And I was really taken by that and wanted to explore it more. As I moved on to graduate school in Ottoman history, and this was the project that I took to graduate school, I became aware of just how very involved he was at life at the Ottoman court and also in the Ottoman administration in the late 18th century into the early years of the 19th century. And also that he's really incredibly documented for someone of this period, for someone who was not a grand vizier or a sultan. Vasif is really exceptional. It's very rare that we can find the amount of documentation, not just his history, but also he had an embassy report. There are more than 100 documents that I found on his life and career in Istanbul, and even his drafts and personal papers survive. So he really did seem to lend himself to doing some sort of biography. It was a chance I couldn't pass up.
Excellent. And so on that note of biography, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit to our viewers about using biography as history. At least from my perspective, it seems to be a genre that was popular in Middle Eastern studies a few decades ago, but it's not quite as common perhaps as it used to be. So what do you gain from using a biography? And how can that speak to these broader historical issues that you talk about in the book?
Sure. This is sort of the question of, is history serious biography, really? There seems to be some reticence about that for some historians. But I think, yes, it can be serious history. I was never really interested in just writing about Vassef's life for the sake of writing about his life. Although he is a really interesting character, I think thoroughly despicable, actually. I don't really like him as a subject, and nor did his colleagues. But I was rather interested in using Vassef to try to write a deeper study of Ottoman thought, of Ottoman culture, and of Ottoman society. So he's the subject of the book for sure, but I'm also using him sort of as a vessel. I argue in the book that Vassef is broadly representative of a generation of Ottoman elites, mainly scribes, who were growing into adulthood in the second half of the 18th century, and who were struggling to come to terms with certain things, mainly the empire's, what they saw as the empire's growing weakness, the challenge that European powers, especially Russia, were posing to the empire at the time. And they were struggling to find answers. Vassef himself allowed me to do this because he wrote so extensively about many of these different issues in his work. But if I could also say too, and make the case for biography as a historical genre, quite frankly, I think that Vassef makes this sort of study much more readable. Lives give us a convenient narrative framework, right? And ultimately, people like to hear stories. People like narrative. So I'm hoping that this history will be more accessible to people who aren't necessarily Ottoman historians.
Excellent. He did certainly have an interesting life, as you chronicle. And I think on that, I was hoping to maybe transition to some of the major stages in his life that you speak to in the book. One of the most important or earliest sort of pivotal moments, it seems, in Vassef's life was the war with Russia, fought with the Ottoman Empire from 1768 to 1774. And I was wondering what Vassef's experiences were in that conflict and how that shaped his thinking about the Ottoman Empire at this time.
Of course. Well, that war is, I think, the pivotal moment of the 18th century for the Ottoman Empire. It was a shock. It was a shock to, I don't maybe not say all Ottoman elites, but certainly the majority of them. These administrators and scribes and other members of the Ottoman elite in the 18th century were really socialized into this idea that the Ottoman Empire was somehow exceptional, that it was specially blessed by God, that it was qualitatively better than all other dynasties and polities, past, present, and future. The idea that Christian Europe could be superior somehow to the empire was more or less inconceivable. So the fact that the Ottomans went to war with Russia and lost so badly to them it provoked a good deal of anxiety. Vassef himself took part directly in the war. He was on the war front for at certain periods. He was captured at some point by the Russians and taken to St. Petersburg for a number of months, although it's not exactly clear how long he was there. And then later was released, came back, and took part in some major negotiations with the Russians. So Vassef experienced this firsthand. And I try to argue in the book that this experience was a catalyst for many of the different intellectual debates that went on in the rest of the century. It was very productive, actually, I think. I refer to this at one point as the collapse of the Ottoman ideology of exceptionalism. And at least as I see it, it was this sort of anxiety provoked by the war which was driving discussions over things like political reform in the 1780s and 1790s, over issues like there was a big debate over the moral and political virtues of peacemaking with non-Muslim powers and others. So the war was important. It was a catalyst for sure.
All right. So you mentioned briefly the encounter that Vasev has with some of these Russian diplomats and when he's taken briefly to Russia. Shortly after, he is then sent to Spain in what you call an honorable exile. I was wondering if you could talk a bit about how his interactions on a much more intimate level with European diplomats at this time might have shaped his thinking. Right? Does Vasev in any way try to pull European ideas and observations that he makes with the more traditional Islamic or Ottoman training that he would have had?
Yes, this is a great question, and it's a hard one too. There's certainly a problem of sources when it comes to this, and brings me back maybe to the limitations of what we can do in a biography for the Ottoman Empire, because these sorts of things that you're asking about are usually not said, at least from the Ottoman perspective. Mm-hmm. We don't have Vasev or one of his peers writing explicitly that, well, I went to Spain and, you know, they were talking about political economy and I thought that sounded like a pretty good idea. So I decided to adopt it. It's never so simple. And it's also never, a matter of Western impact that these Ottoman scribes were having encounters and just sort of absorbing what they observed. It was, as you said, a matter of taking what they already knew, the frameworks that they had already, and perhaps adjusting what they saw outside of the empire to these frameworks. It was always repackaged repackaged according to their own concepts. What I've tried to do in Ottoman, in the chapter on Vasev's time in Spain and in his interactions with the Russians, in some points I'm really forced to speculate because I can't say for certain, but more broadly I've tried to trace shifts in the way he talks about certain things over the course of decades from the 1770s through the 1780s, 1790s, into the 19th century. So just for example, Vasev says a lot over the course of his career about engaging or not engaging with non-Muslim powers. And you can see quite a distinct shift in this over the course of time. So he goes from talking about engagement in the 1780s in a very grudging way that he says the Ottomans should only make peace with the Russians as he puts it, the lesser of two evils, the sort of, I guess, a choice that's not quite as bad. To in the 1790s, after he comes back from Spain, fully adopting the idea of reciprocal permanent diplomatic ties with non-Muslim countries, including Russia. I'm not sure if I can say that this is just Vasev's journey or whether he's sort of breathing in the zeitgeist of the times. Certainly there were other Ottomans who came to the same conclusions. This is when Sultan Selim III sends out permanent Ottoman diplomats abroad for the first time. And so Vasev was certainly not the only one who was onto this. Again, I think that he's representative here.
Okay. And so since you brought up Sultan Selim III, usually seen as a major reformer, another turning point in Ottoman history, I was wondering if you could share with the viewers a little bit about how Ahmed Vasev fit in with that change, what he thought about the new sultan and the war that was going on at the beginning of Selim III's reign.
Well, Vasev was definitely a partisan of Selim III. In fact, he was one of his major, he became one of his major mouthpieces. Vasev under Selim was very frequently he very frequently held the position of the court historian, or Vaca Nuvis. So he was tasked with writing the history, the sort of the dynastic history of the empire, the officially endorsed history. He also used the history, though, to to justify and to argue for the things that Selim was doing, for this program of reforms Selim had started, the New Order reforms, usually we call them Nizami Jadid. So Vasif wrote this enormous history of his, Charms and Truths of Relics and Annals, is how I've translated it. It's about 2,500 folios long. So the thing is huge. Vasif spends a good deal of time in this work talking about the reforms, justifying them intellectually. It's always put as a matter of restoration, that this is what the Sultan is doing is restoring what Ottomans called the order of the world. To put it in a very contemporary context, these guys were all about making the empire great again, mega, right? Reform is all about restoration for them. So one of the major agendas in Vasif's chronicle is to do precisely this and to create an intellectual platform for these reforms.
I was struck by how both conservative and yet progressive or forward thinking these sorts of reforms are, right? I mean, normally when we hear discussions of the Ottoman reform period, it's usually thinking about how to reconcile the Ottoman Empire with modernity, right? And yet this was also sort of a backward looking, as you mentioned, right? Looking to previous ages when the Ottoman Empire was great. And I found that to be very interesting. I think it blurs some of the distinctions that we have oftentimes between the modern and the traditional, the past and the present.
Yeah, for sure. I hope that I haven't overplayed this hand in the title of the book, The First of the Modern Ottomans, but I do think that Vasif and this generation were very much transitional. And there was definitely this tension, which you talk about, between what you might call the traditional and the modern. But the reforms that they're talking about are indeed looking back to the past and using these, in many cases, very well-established, very, very old, at least a few hundred years old, conceptual frameworks of, talking about the order of the world as this unchanging, primordial, unchanging and primordial sort of way that the world should be, and that the way to make the empire great again is to restore balance to the order of the world. They talk about this a lot. But in fact, I think if we look closely at Vasif and his colleagues, it's at this period, late 18th century or early 19th century, that we really start to see many of these older conceptual frameworks start to erode or break down, so that by the time Vasif dies in 1806, Ottoman intellectuals are still discussing reform in the same terms, but the things that they're talking about, I don't think it's hard to say in one section of his chronicle, Vasif proposes taking orphans and beggars off the street and conscripting them by force and putting them in military academies to train them as soldiers. This is not something that you can easily justify according to earlier Ottoman understandings of social order. You are not supposed to mix social groups like that. Soldiers are soldiers. Artisans are artisans. Farmers are farmers. You're not supposed to mix social groups like this. So I think that that's just a good example of showing that they're really pushing these older frameworks to the breaking point. And it wouldn't be that much... It's not that much longer down the road in the 1830s and 1840s that, I mean, many of these ideas have ceased to have any power anymore, these conceptual frameworks.
Interesting. So, and it is, as you say, then a period of crossroads, right, with the empire. I'm curious if you could speak a little bit about how Ahmed Vasif diagnoses the problems going on in the empire. Who does he lay the blame upon?
Whose fault exactly. Is it? Right. So this raises the This raises the issue of Ottoman decline. Vassaf is certainly a declinist. He believes that the empire more or less peaked in about the year 1790, which is, if you do the math, the Islamic millennium. Vassaf has a really interesting diagnosis of what went wrong with the empire. I mean, a lot of earlier Ottoman intellectuals like to trot out the Arab historian Ibn Khaldun and talk about how all dynasties on earth go through certain cycles, and there's a rise and proliferation, and then a decline and collapse. Vassaf is not, interestingly, he's not an Ibn Khaldunist, and he instead has this rather idiosyncratic understanding of what happened. So he claims, and he's using a specific concept that became very popular during the 1790s under Selim III. It was this idea of reciprocity, meeting like for like. There's not a good translation. The Arabic is muqabala bin mithl. Now, originally, what this meant was that this was a legal precept, meaning that it was permissible to adopt, say, new technology or new tactics from your enemy, from your non-Muslim enemy, in order to use against them. Vassaf takes this idea and he expands it in very interesting ways. So he claims that this principle of reciprocation is sort of like a motor in history, that all groups in history have borrowed from their enemies to use these technologies and ideas against them. And he said that the Ottomans were particularly good at this reciprocation up until the 1590s, when, for various reasons, he said, they got complacent and stopped abiding by the principle. Meanwhile, he says, their European adversaries started doing the exact opposite. They started borrowing from the Ottomans and using Ottoman technology against them. And so this is a way that he's arguing for Selim's reforms as well. He says that in order for the empire to truly be great again, Ottomans have to return to this principle of reciprocation or reciprocity, borrow from the Europeans, and use those European technologies and tactics in their own armed forces. And it doesn't just stop necessarily at the military realm. I mean, they're also looking to the European example in diplomacy and to a certain extent in administration too.
I was wondering then how, since we were talking about this notion of Ottoman decline, how you see your work fitting in with the debate that had raged on for decades about Ottoman decline. So you have earlier historians, Bernard Lewis and others, reading a lot of the declinists like Ahmed Vassif and sort of taking their accounts basically at face value and saying, oh, well, clearly the Ottoman Empire was declining at this period. Look at all of these Ottoman officials saying so. Then revisionist historians, as I'm sure you know, come along, Roger Owen, André Rimon, and others, and dispute this, pointing out, ways in which the Ottoman Empire was expanding and still growing and so forth. And I was wondering how your study of Ahmed Vassif has helped you to think through these issues and what insights you may have on this.
Yeah, this is another great question. I think it's helpful to always keep in mind that decline has always first and foremost been a product of the Ottomans' own historical imagination, the way that they were thinking about the history of their empire. And that if you take the idea of an Ottoman decline in academic works, in Western academic works, it ultimately goes back to these Ottoman voices, like you were saying. You have your Koci Bey and Katib Çelebi and others. And Vassaf he definitely shared in this too, as I was just saying. He definitely believed sincerely that that the empire was in decline. I don't want readers of my book to lose sense of the fact that there was, by Vossev's age, quite a big deal of danger that the empire was in. Vossev is not just speaking idly. By the end of the 18th century, the Ottoman Empire was certainly losing wars. It was on the verge of bankruptcy, and you could argue that by the end of Sultan Selim III's reign, it was questionable whether it would survive much longer. Personally, I don't have that much of a problem in talking about some sort of Ottoman decline by this period, by the late 18th century or early 19th century, at least Ottoman decline with a small d. And that mainly I'm talking about political power here, right? So the Ottoman Empire, this period, if you're just talking about its ability to project power within its own boundaries or abroad, the Ottoman Empire in 1800 is quite a bit weaker than the Ottoman Empire in 1700 or 1600, for that matter. But I certainly don't buy into the idea of a general Ottoman decline by any means. In fact, what I hope the book has done, if anything, is show that during this period of political weakness, there was a marked degree of intellectual debate and vigor going on in the empire, at least as I trace it in these circles of intellectuals and scribes in Istanbul. Certainly, I think it was elsewhere too, but I'm only looking at these guys. Hmm.
Well, and so that takes me then to the peak of Ahmed Vassif's career, which is toward the end of his life, right? The very opening years of the 19th century. Can you describe for our readers a little bit about what that peak looked like?
Vassif's time as chief scribe, the height of his career, as you said, is kind of an anticlimax. I mean, he aspired to this position, the head of the Ottoman bureaucracy, for his entire career, his entire adult life. He finally makes it in 1805, and he's actually given the opportunity for once to take all of these ideas that he's been forming and hopefully put them into practice. It doesn't end up working out for him very well, though. He turns out to be kind of a mediocre chief scribe. He bungles through some negotiations with the Russians over a contentious treaty of alliance. And in doing so, pushes the empire forward on its way into another war with the Russian Empire. He doesn't actually live to see this war. He's the chief scribe for only a short period of time before he falls ill and then dies. But shortly after his death, these events that he's helped put into motion lead to the outbreak of another round of hostilities between the Ottomans and the Russians. The Russians invade the Ottoman Empire, and shortly thereafter, in part due to the circumstances of the war, Vossif's patron, Sultan Selim, is dethroned. Many of Vossif's peers are hunted down and murdered by people who were opposed to the new order reforms. And then the following year, Sultan Selim himself is killed. So Vossif's time, the last chapter of his life is, as I said, kind of an anticlimax. He was probably sort of lucky in that he didn't live much longer than he did, though. I think that he would have been probably one of the lead names on the list of these Janissary opponents of Selim when they started hunting down their enemies. Mm. Vossif had these grand ambitions himself, and he talks about them in his history, that he claims that his history rivals the best histories of ancient of medieval Persia, and he's the best that the Ottoman Empire has ever produced. He has these very grand ideas of his what his legacy will be, and that also didn't really quite work out the way he thought it would. His history was popular for a period into the mid 19th century, at which point another better known nowadays Ottoman historian Ahmet Cevdet came along and completely rewrote the period of much of the period that Ahmet Vossif wrote. And superseded his work. Nobody reads those portions of Vossif's history that Gevdet wrote. I mean, it's possible Gevdet took a lot from Vossif.
I certainly enjoyed reading through this account. He's a fascinating figure, as you mentioned. There are many really interesting episodes in his life, and I guess I just wanted to turn it back to you, give you the final word on Ahmed Vossif. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to take away from this? Any insights?
I think I'll just come back to the idea that the story that I'm telling is the story of a transitional generation. Vossif and his peers were the first generation of Ottomans to face some unprecedented problems. So, for example, they were probably the last generation of Ottoman elites to be raised in an empire that could go it alone, that had the respect of its neighbors in Europe, and to a certain extent could even push them around. They grew up in that sort of world. They remembered it, or at least thought they remembered those days when the empire was still actually exceptional. By the end of their lives, though, things had changed completely. The empire was no longer a respected power on the global stage. It was being pushed around by hostile powers like Russia. And the world that their children grew into was completely different. Their children only knew an empire that was on the political stage enfeebled, that was unstable and bankrupt. So I'm trying to tell through Vossif the story of this generation that's a bridge between two eras in the empire's history, and how they understood the world, how they tried to intervene, and how they tried to... the ultimate aim was making the empire great again, wasn't it? Restoration. Perhaps this holds lessons for us.
Perhaps indeed. Well, thank you so much for talking about the book with us. We like to end with just a question on a more personal note, and that is, now that you've written this chronicle of sorts, this biography of Ahmed Vossif, what are the next steps for you? What new projects are you perhaps considering?
Well, I've started working on... thank you for asking. I've started working more recently on something completely different, a project in Ottoman theology. So still intellectual history, but rather more rarefied air, dealing with things like fate and free will and predestination. On the other hand, I have always thought that I enjoyed writing this biography of Vossif so much that I'd really like to do it again if it's possible. And I have some ideas of people who I think would be great subjects for future biographical studies. We certainly need more of them in Ottoman history. I mean, there's only a handful written in the last 30 years.
Absolutely. So we can make the Ottoman Empire great again. We can make biography great again too, perhaps.
Sounds great.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Menschinger, for sitting down with us and sharing this really interesting chronicle with us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Josh.